Disclaimer, I am a counseling student, I am not a mental health professional, and I cannot give or offer mental health services. You are listening to Good, You. I'm your host, Samantha, and today I'm going to be sitting down with Dr. Jennifer Nardozzi and discuss eating disorders. So Dr. Jennifer has a program that's called FAB program. It stands for Food and Body. And so be sure to give them a follow on Instagram. Their account is FAB_. And yeah, so today, not only do we discuss in the very beginning about the importance of therapy and seeking mental health help, but we discuss all the different types of eating disorders, the negative stigmas associated with eating disorders, and how to support your loved one who's struggling with one. So it's definitely a trigger warning for anyone who is struggling and might find some of the content more triggering to them. But overall, this is a very informative episode, and Dr. Jen does such a great job describing what it's like to be in the midst of an eating disorder and the little voice that's in our heads during that time. So I hope you enjoy today's episode. Let's get started. Okay, so I'm here with Dr. Jennifer Nardozzi. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Well, Samantha, thank you so much for having me. As I told you, I think it's so great what you're doing in terms of spreading awareness around all kinds of mental health issues. So this is quite the gift to be here with you today.
I appreciate that so much. I really have been having just so much fun and meeting new people, and the feedback has been really cool to get to from people who have listened to the episodes. So thank you. So Dr. Jen is kind of, we all are part of the FAB program, right? And they reached out to me on Instagram, which was really cool. And so that is about eating disorders. You specialize with eating disorders, Dr. Jen. Can you tell us about yourself and what you do?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So it's hard to believe that, Samantha, I've been doing this for the last 2 decades. And that's awesome. I will say, I don't think I 100% knew I was going to go into eating disorders, right? Like where I started even before going on to graduate school is I was working with kids who had all kinds of mental health issues and behavioral issues, and I really loved it. Like I loved it was kind of a crazy environment because I was actually living with these kids. I'd live with them during the week. And I just really wanted to know, how do you make a difference with trying to help people? And so then I went on to graduate school and I ended up doing a dissertation. I went to a clinical program, but I did my dissertation really kind of exploring and investigating eating issues. And then my first official job that I had after I was licensed was at an eating disorder treatment center. And it was the first eating disorder treatment center in the country. Now,
Wow.
It was the very first one. It's called the Renfrew Center, and they started in Philadelphia, and then they had another residential treatment center that opened in Florida. And so I was at the Florida site, and I will say the work was super intense. It was really intense work, but I just loved it. I just really loved the work. And so that's really kind of what ended up like launching me into this area. And I think, you know, my experience is people either really gravitate and say, yes, this is my fit, or they say, no, it's not my fit. You know, it's kind of like hard to be a maybe in this area. So yeah, people either love it and go for it, or they kind of don't. And just one thing I'll say about our FAB program. So FAB stands for the Food and Body Program. And the team really are people who've had years and years of working in this area of eating disorders. We're really dedicated to making a difference for people. And it really is the convergence of like two decades of work in the area of eating disorders.
Wow. Well, first I want to start with the fact that something I found interesting is you always go into the program thinking you're going to specialize in one thing. Right. And then you find yourself somewhere else. And that's kind of what our professors always warn us about. It's like, don't have your head set on everything, on anything, be right. open. And it's true. I feel like everyone I've talked to has kind of just fell into where they are and they love it. So that's awesome. And I think that's amazing that you found yourself in one of the first ones to open here. Like, and I imagine how intense that must have been for people to finally be able to have somewhere that they can go for help that specializes with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. It was, you know, again, it was, I'm keep using that word intense because at that point, you know, if somebody's going to a residential treatment center, they're literally stopping their lives. You know, they're putting everything on pause to say, I'm going to dedicate these next X number of weeks or even months to really work on my recovery process. So it takes something to really do that. And I think it was great in terms of my own training. And like you're saying, did I know I was going to do eating disorders specifically? No, I sometimes say that I feel like it kind of found me or I, you know, something like that. And I had great supervisors. So that made a big difference in terms of like really feeling like I was growing and developing there at that treatment center. And then, you know, the other thing that I'll say is I feel like this area is an area that always gives me the opportunity to learn and to grow and to develop myself. I never feel like I have it handled. Yeah. So even after all these decades, like, yeah, I've learned a couple things. You hope so after all this time. But at the same time, it's like I'm still growing as a human being, as a professional, to really try to help my clients as best as I possibly can.
And that's the best answer that could be given, because it's important that people understand, and even professionals that have gotten comfortable understand, that you have to treat every person individually. Mm-hmm. And every case is different and every client is different. And that's, it's important to see them separate from what they're coming in for. Mm-hmm. And so I really like that you added that in, because it will be like that everywhere. It should be. And if people have gotten too comfortable within their work, then they might need to kind of recheck and reevaluate. Mm-hmm.
It's really true. It's really true, because, and I think that's what's so exciting about psychology. It's, you know, so many things are changing and developing and different modalities of healing and therapies. So it is a really exciting field. And there's so many different ways of going, right? I started off at that, it was actually like a behavioral kind of health center where I was living with these children, and then residential. And then I did sort of every single level of care, then found myself in outpatient services. And the FAB program is really wraparound services in an outpatient setting. So the way that I see it now is that we're really bringing the treatment to the individual to really provide as much treatment as we can around that person to see if they ideally can really get the treatment that they need in their home environment. Now, sometimes people do have to go on to the treatment centers or hospitals if they need that. And it's good to have all of those options.
I really like that though, because you're not changing their environment, which mm-hmm. will be the same when they get back after inpatient. And I have a question. For inpatient, sure. do they go out after, or is it just inpatient and then they kind of?
That's a great question. So with the eating disorder treatment world, and substance abuse is similar too, there's these different step downs that people can do. So hospital and then residential. Some people mm-hmm. do both, and some people just do residential. So hospital is going to be more of a sort of a medical bent to it. And residential, you'll have the medical professionals. It is 24/7. And then people step down oftentimes to what they call PHP. So partial hospitalization program, like a day program. Then there's an intensive outpatient program level. So they're still going to the treatment center, but they're home, like sleeping at home, but still doing the treatment sometimes 3 to 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. And then they step to outpatient. So the way that I think of what we're doing, it's between traditional outpatient, like your once a week model, mm-hmm. and a treatment center. So I see Fab as the bridge. Okay. And part of the reason why I created that is I was seeing people were coming into my office and they needed more, right? They needed more services. They needed more team. They needed more groups. They needed more like-minded people. And so this is why I created Fab, because I really saw a gap in terms of the spectrum of treatment.
Yeah, I definitely, that's why I kind of was asking, because I didn't want to just assume that if people going inpatient didn't get any outpatient help, but I really do like that people can stay in their environment, because I don't think everyone does need that intensive of care, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's awesome. And what you mm-hmm. do is amazing. And I can imagine it takes a lot of patience, empathy, and understanding. You kind of talked about what, mm-hmm. how you fell into it, but what made mm-hmm. you stay within this line of work? What brought that interest in you?
Yeah. What made me stay? Honestly, I think what really made me stay is having such great mentors. So early on at the treatment center, I mean, I'd love to give it a shout out to her. Her name's Dr. Gail Brooks. I can get emotional just talking about her, because, you know, you have certain people, and you probably have this too, Samantha, in your program, but there's those people who really have such an impact on you. And she was somebody who I definitely felt I learned from, I grew from. And at the same time, she was also really willing to hear my ideas. And so, like, I had an idea, I was really interested in the convergence of bringing more spirituality to the treatment center. And so she just was always like open to my ideas. Like, we ended up having this idea on our beautiful property at Renfrew, like, let's create a healing garden. And she was open to that. And like, she was open to, oh, let's create an alumni program. So one of the things that I saw early on for me is I was really like a creator. And that really was something that gave me a lot of pleasure. It's kind of part of who I am. And so I think she saw that in me and really nurtured that in me. And it's really what I bring to the Fab program, because the Fab program really isn't based on anything. It's something that, you know, I came up with and enrolled a team into. So I think what really fed me is this very complex area of eating disorders, because it is complex. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do we keep trying to find ways to have people live their joyful, fulfilling lives and to really transform these food and body programs? And how do we do it in a way that people are not falling back to the old behaviors? Right. And you kind of pointed to this when you talked about the treatment center, because a lot of times I would see people do really well at the treatment center, right? Because they wouldn't have the stressors from home, and it felt safe, and they had their team and they had their community. And then it was making the leap home. Like, how am I going to now do this in my home environment with mm-hmm. all the stressors that are, you know, that I left behind, that are still there for the most part, and not turn back to the eating disorder as a way of coping?
Yeah, I would have to imagine too, especially for those living at home with parents still, like, being at home with yourself is one thing, but being at home where that's also a level of loss of control. And I know that one thing with eating disorders is the need for that self-control and using it through food. So I imagine that do you see a lot of 18 and younger?
You know, I really see a mix of ages. I would say anywhere from teenagers, right? So maybe my youngest right now is like 12. Well, she just turned 13. So like 12. And then, you know, I've worked with people dealing with these issues in their 70s. Mm-hmm. So I really, the range of people, but I would say that 18, you know, that college age is kind of a critical time. Mm-hmm. So it also depends on like, when does the person seek the treatment? And what I will say is really great, and this is why your show is so great too, in terms of education and educating people about mental health issues and eating disorders, is parents are starting to identify when something is going on for their child earlier. And the other thing that was really interesting during the pandemic in particular, I was finding teenagers actually finding, like, being able to almost start diagnosing themselves, like, oh, I am really struggling with an eating disorder. And I had one young woman who she didn't even have her driver's license. So she was, you know, young teenager. And so when she went to her medical doctor, she pulled her medical doctor aside and was like, told her mom to sit outside and was like, I think I'm really struggling with an eating disorder. Like, I went on WebMD and I can really see that I'm like this, this, this. And it was so great because then the medical doctor brought in her mom and like, it really was this young person who was like, I need help.
That's awesome. I love how the younger generation has taken a grasp on mental health. It's amazing.
Right? It's so different. It's like mental health. It's okay. It's okay to seek therapy, right?
Yeah. It's physical. Yeah. It's like physical health. You go to the doctor for that. If we're able to go and have our physical every year, I mean, what is the difference with getting a self-checkup for your mental health?
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's what I say to the clients that I work with is even when they are ready for like, okay, like I've done a portion of work and I'm really in a good place to like, okay, I'm going to go out and live my life. I don't really think I need therapy every week, or maybe I don't need it every other week or even once a month anymore. But I say that same thing that you just said, Samantha, is like, if something comes up, you can reach mm-hmm. out. We can do a few sessions. I mean, it's the same way I use my therapist, right? Yep. Like I have my therapist. I may not see her every week, but if something comes up, I sure as heck am scheduling some sessions because it's so important. It's like, why wouldn't we have that and make that okay for people?
Exactly. Life happens. Things happen in life. You don't have to go through it alone. You don't have to try and figure out how to process it alone. You can learn these awesome coping skills. And like you said, therapy is not meant to be for forever. You don't have to worry about this being something that, oh, I'm going to find something out and I'm going to be there forever. No, it's meant to make you autonomous and it's meant to make you able to have those coping skills when you're at home alone and you don't have those therapy sessions.
Mm-hmm, so. Exactly. And I think there's something so healing about having that safe place.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I have a young person in my life and me and her dad are both in the mental health field.
Okay, good.
Okay. It's kind of funny, but you know, are we trying to work with her? It's like, no, like everybody needs their person, their safe place. I believe, just like you said, it's like, maybe it's not even something that's so big that you're dealing with, but whatever it is, it's like, it can be so helpful to be able to talk it out in that neutral, with that neutral party, learning different ways of thinking, different ways of coping. So if any of your listeners are like thinking about seeing a therapist,
do it.
You know, I can also tell you if people are interested in hearing, you know, more about FAB, there's like a quick and easy way that they can learn more about us. I can say a little bit more about that at the end, but you know, what's so great with Psychology Today is, you know, you can go on.
So easy. Right?
Make it so easy. There's little videos a lot of times of the therapist. You can do 15-minute, like a little complimentary consult. It's what we do to really meet the person. So you don't have to even commit from that first session. All you have to do is like, you know, kind of like go on a date.
Yeah. I like that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I say, therapist shopping. And I even have a video or a podcast episode on how to find a therapist and how to spot red flags in therapy, because I'm sure, unfortunately, as you know, that there are people who practice with not the best ethical practices, and you're going to find that and it happens. And don't let that scare you away. Keep mm-hmm. looking. You will find someone who changes your life, and it's mm-hmm. so worth that.
Right. And sometimes the person, you know, yeah, there's always right in any profession, but sometimes mm-hmm. the person is just not a fit for you.
Like that's maybe true. Exactly.
Right. Maybe they're a good therapist for somebody else, but they're not a good therapist for you.
Yeah. So do your research on the different types of theories in therapy too. Because I didn't know that when I first went into therapy. I didn't know there were different theories. I got lucky. Like, well, with my second therapist, I got really lucky. But I have an Adlerian therapist. She's amazing. And I had no idea that that was a thing when I first looked. And so it would have been really helpful, you know?
I know that. Yeah, I always tell people, like, get three names. This is what I did when I found my therapist. Like, get three names and talk to them. Yep. And you will know. Like, you will know which one is your fit, even just by asking them a couple questions, or you're going to feel the goodness of fit. Yep. And look, sometimes you have to give it a few times to say, okay, like, does this really, you know, it does, sometimes it takes a couple times to really see, like, you know, can we work together? But it's worth it. It's so worth it.
Yeah. Are you comfortable with getting vulnerable with this person? It's just like the beginning of a friendship in a way. And it can be a little awkward, but just let that ride through. And I'm really glad we touched on that subject, because that's the whole reason of creating this podcast, is just like, it should be natural. This should be very open and a natural thing to do. Don't let anybody judge you about it. Mm-hmm. And so, but today we're going to be getting into eating disorders, and we did have a previous episode on that a while back. I want to say it was around episode 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. So can you talk to me about the different types of eating disorders?
Yeah. And you know, that question is such an important one. And I will say, I conceptualize it differently now. Right. Like, when I first started off my career, because, like, the ones you hear about are, you hear about anorexia nervosa, you hear about binging and purging, and you hear about binge eating. Like, those are kind of the three big ones that you hear about. But I think it's sometimes more important to think about things along a spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I think this is what my experience has really taught me. So even sometimes, when somebody comes into my office or joins FAB and they're like, Dr. Jen, my problem is that I binge. And I'm like, okay, I can really get that's the behavior that's causing a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. And when we really look at their relationship with food, many times there's a lot of restricting that's going on. And why do I say that? What's so important is because sometimes people are really setting themselves up for the binging because of all the restricting behaviors. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times people are like, oh, I don't have a problem with the restricting, right? Like, because that behavior is a little more normalized in our society, right? Like, all the dieting kind of mentality, or, hey, if you're over-exercising, that's a good thing, right? But sometimes this can be all part of the cycle, right? Yeah. So what I really try to ask people is to have them walk me through the day, right? Have me understand, like, what they're doing with these behaviors and how it's all connected. And so I think that's important to really tease out for people. And even with the binging and purging, many times people, again, are like restricting, then it's setting themselves up for binging. And then there can be some kind of purging behavior, whether it's self-induced vomiting or they're purging through some kind of over-exercising. So, you know, what I have people really understand is like how it's all connected. And the other big thing with eating disorders, as much as it's called eating disorders and it's coming out in the food, like I had a colleague who used to always say, geez, these should have been called emotional disorders, right?
Yeah.
Because it's really connected to, and it's really connected to, we're using the food, either under eating, overeating, or some version of the purging. I always say it's like two sides of the same hand, whether you're restricting or binging or doing some other compensating behavior. But the deeper thing is, what is it that you're coping in this way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? That was very much how my diagnosis teacher teaches. He says, you know, a lot of people want to diagnose and kind of fix that, what it is, but what's causing this, right? What's causing the depression? Not just treating the depression, what's causing the anxiety, and kind of not only helping and giving coping skills for the depression and the anxiety, but finding the cause of it and fixing that as well. So exactly. That's kind of what you're touching on.
Because we're trying to understand like the function of these behaviors, because I always say it makes some kind of sense.
Yeah.
Right? Like a person is coping in this way to deal with something. And at the time of when these things started, it was like the thing that they knew, right? It was the thing that they grasped onto to kind of deal and survive. So maybe now it's not working in the same way, but the behavior has become very ritualized. So like we're trying to understand, just like your teacher is teaching you, like I sometimes conceptualize it like in like an iceberg.
Yep.
Right. So like the tip of the iceberg is like those behaviors you're seeing, right? The restricting, the binging, the purging, you know, whatever version, emotional eating. And then underneath, we have to get to that part as well. So it's like we're treating, you have to treat the behaviors, but you also have to understand, well, what is on a deeper level, what is all this really about? And that's really where the therapy piece comes in as well. And yeah. And why it takes some time, right? It takes some time to really work through these eating disorders, right? It's not a quick fix. I will say part of the reason why we created FAB is we did want to give people kind of like the roadmap. Like, here's your roadmap. And like, let's try to get through this as quickly as possible. But it's never quick, right? It's never just like that.
Yeah, definitely. That I like the iceberg analogy. I use it for everything. I love the anger iceberg. And it's true. It's the things that you don't see. And if you only treat the top of the iceberg that you can see, then most likely it's going to come back. Like all this, these problems and these behaviors are going to come back as coping.
Right.
So how does someone know when they're in the midst of an eating disorder?
You know, sometimes it's the person dealing might be almost like the last one to know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, because a part of these problems, these disorders, denial goes along with it.
Yep.
Now look, more education like this podcast and more information out there about eating disorders. Now people are starting, like the teenager who I said, like kind of diagnosed herself because mm-hmm. there's more information out there. So thankfully, hopefully people are not going through those denial stages as long. But right, we're keep saying that on some level, these behaviors work. Otherwise you wouldn't be doing that. So sometimes people have a hard time really admitting like, oh, I'm just eating healthy. You know, yeah. I'm just losing a few pounds. Oh, my weight isn't that low, right? Mm-hmm. So what I would have people start to really look at is how much time and like almost like bandwidth is this taking up for you?
Yeah.
Right? Because like my clients will say, oh my gosh, I'm thinking about food all the time.
All the time. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
I'm planning my next meal. I'm now not sometimes wanting to go out with friends or to go out with friends and eat. It's like this whole ordeal. I'm finding that I'm engaging in binging behaviors, right? Like I'm just eating these large quantities of food and I'm not even understanding why, or I'm noticing I'm like spending too much time exercising. Like it started off this amount and now it's just increased and it's like I have to do it. Mm-hmm. So I would have people start really getting honest with themselves about like how much time is all of this taking up?
Yeah.
Like how much are you obsessing? Are you thinking about it? Are you also experiencing some physical symptoms, right? Sometimes my clients will say like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling dizzy. Right. Or I'm just noticing I'm not feeling like the way I used to feel, or my mood feels really down, like, or I don't have the same level of energy because if you're engaging in any one of these, the restricting, purging, binging, like whatever kind of permutation of that, that takes a lot from these behaviors like really start impacting the body. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing to get honest about, is like physically, how am I feeling?
Yeah.
Sometimes people feel it, sometimes they don't though. That's the thing. They get used to sort of feeling a little, like I call it floaty, and then they don't even really see that anything's going on. So it does take something to start getting really honest. I also tell people to pay attention to what other people are saying to them, right? Because like, you know, your parents, your, you know, significant other, your best friends, like if people are starting to express something mm-hmm. to you, like people are not going to do that or express that level of concern unless they really love you and they're worried.
Yep.
So like, are you starting to have people like make comments to you? Like, are you okay? Or, you know, like, so pay attention to what people around you are saying as well. And another really good thing to do is go see a medical doctor, ideally one who does have some experience with eating disorders. If you're also not sure, if you're like, I need to start somewhere, like that's a good place. Just like I was talking about that teen, like she went to see her medical doctor. Her medical doctor really listened to her and then said, okay, I'm going to set you up with Dr. Jen. So it was like, it, like her treatment went really, really quick. Or schedule a time with, you know, a psychologist who knows eating disorders to have an assessment and to really take a look at this, because you don't want to play around with these problems because they really end up affecting people. They can affect mm-hmm. people like very significantly, you know,
quickly.
Right.
Yeah. Quickly and dangerously too. It's, exactly. I brought it up in the other eating disorder episode. I had struggled with, I wasn't diagnosed, but it was definitely extreme restricting myself in high school. And I feel like I want to add in here, because you're talking a lot about it, is that voice in your head that tells you to not tell anyone, right? Do not listen to it.
Right.
Do not listen to it. I know you tell yourself, oh, just for this week, or I can handle it. Just even if you can get it out, get the words out to someone you love and who cares about you, just say, look, I'm having these thoughts again. Just want to let you know. So, because it gives that voice that much less power. And there are obviously times where it will come up in my head, you know, and the first thing I do now is I tell my husband or I tell my therapist, and I'm like, just letting you know. That's and awesome. I'm not happy that I'm telling you, because it's not fun to have to deal with it. And it's not fun to have to be open about it, but it's definitely important. And to just be your number one supporter.
That's so good. Such great advice, Samantha. And sometimes we talk about that eating disorder voice, like you're talking about, as like the bad boyfriend.
Yes.
That absolutely. Bad boyfriend that's like, you know, I'm the only one you need, and don't mm-hmm. tell your friends or fam, you know, it like, it really,
I understand it.
Right.
No, they won't understand it.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, by saying that thing you don't want to say mm-hmm. it, like exactly those words, like it gives it less power. And it also starts opening up the dialogue of what's really going on inside. And honestly, I do think that's a great first step, is like, can you start telling the truth to somebody who might get it, who's going to listen to you, who's going to believe you? Mm-hmm. And you might have to keep saying it, right? Keep saying it. And I think the thing that I would also say is, if you're concerned at all, especially if you're listening to, if you're concerned at all, like, why wouldn't you give yourself the opportunity to meet with somebody and to at least explore it, right? Yeah. At least explore it, understand it, understand what's going on, understand maybe some other ways to cope with whatever is going on in a healthier way.
Exactly. And if there's not a problem, then you won't find anything there, right? So mm-hmm. what's the harm in at least looking? And I think that's a really good mindset too. It's like, well, I can just at least see if something's actually going on and happening right. in my mind. So I like that analogy as well. Yeah, that metaphorical voice in your head is it's there with a lot of things too, by the way. It's not just eating disorders, it's there with depression, it's there with anxiety. Like, just make sure, even if you have to write it out, like if you're very uncomfortable talking about it, writing it out, sliding that little journal, daily journal into somebody else. So
I'm a big journaler. I'm looking at my journal right now. I'm very big in writing and getting that out, because it is almost like this little weed, right? And it's like, if you don't pluck it out in some way, right, either by speaking it out or writing it out,
keeps growing.
Right. It will keep kind of growing and taking root. So I love the writing. Or I have some people who will do like the voice journal, like,
yes,
which is really great too. And then sometimes playing it back and hearing yourself and hearing what you're saying. And even if you can talk yourself into a better place, that can be really effective too.
I love that. Cause I have long drives and sometimes I just turn the radio or my, like I'll listen to some true crime podcast. That's my little, my thing that I listen to, and I just talk out loud, because that's the times that you think the most, I think, are on long drives. So how can families, how can family members and loved ones recognize the signs of an eating disorder?
So I would say, you know your loved one best. Mm-hmm. So if you're noticing changes, now it could be changes in bodily appearance, but not always, right? Like one of the myths about eating disorders is like your weight is going to be different. Sometimes people are like normal weight and they are engaging in all kinds of eating disorder behaviors, but sometimes you can notice changes in like just the way the person looks. Could be weight, but it can also be like you're just noticing, huh, like they don't have that same sparkle in their eyes, right? Or like something seems a little bit off, right? You're noticing changes with what you're seeing in terms of their relationship with food. So maybe you're seeing that they're engaging in some like dieting and like again at the mealtime, maybe they're pushing around food or they're going up to go to the bathroom, like right after the meal, or like just something is not seeming so okay. And you know your loved one best. So if you're seeing like something feels different, I would say trust yourself. Because I've had, parents and loved ones and partners, it oftentimes is that loved one that gets that person to get help. That I would say is more common than like the teenager who goes to the doctor. Like it's happening more and more, but still it's usually somebody's loved one who gets them into treatment. So I would say take the risk of saying something. Here's the thing. In the beginning, you may get the person sort of deflecting, like, I'm fine, right?
Yep.
Like say a parent or a partner or whoever, like, the person may, their initial thing could be that they want to minimize what's going on or deflect or deny. So just know, like, that's kind of part of like what we were saying about the voice, that little voice is going to be like, don't tell them the truth. Right. Mm-hmm. So you may not get, oh, so you're concerned about me. You might get a person who gets really angry with you, some way to kind of get you to back off. And what I would say is, try the best you can to be like calm, like in a calm place. Like sometimes I have parents who like approach their loved one very anxious or very angry. That doesn't usually work well, even though of course you're going to be anxious if you're seeing your loved one struggling. But as much as possible, trying to get yourself in a grounded, calmer place. And then to, without like making the person wrong, but to say what you're noticing, right? Like, I've noticed that you've been dieting and losing weight and you still seem like you're wanting to lose more weight. And that's concerning because that doesn't seem like what you need to do right now. Like you're at a good place and I'm just noticing this and I'm feeling concerned about you. And what do you think? Like trying to be in open dialogue with the person, like trying to join with them, trying to have them get that you really are coming from, like, I care about you, I love you, and let's work on this together. Like, let's collaborate in terms of what's going on and what you might need in terms of help.
Yeah. I can imagine it can possibly maybe feel like you're being gaslit a little bit by the person who you're seeing something wrong, because I imagine they can come back really irritable. Then you might not feel comfortable touching on that subject again. And I think it's just important to be there as that supportive person, that they know that when it's safe for them too, they can come to you, like you said. And it's the same with like substance abuse recovery. I like that you brought that up earlier, because there are definitely a lot of similarities with those two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would agree with that. One of the statistics even says that like 50% of people with eating disorders also struggle with substances. So there is sometimes that crossover that people are dealing with both. And you're right, there are some similarities. And like when you're approaching somebody sometimes with substances, that is the first thing where somebody wants to minimize, like, oh, this, maybe this isn't that much of a problem. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, why it's so important to take the risk to say something is because the quicker we can identify that maybe there really is a problem, you know, the easier, you know, to get the help versus years and years and years go by, right? Like, we have a woman who was in our programs, and she said to one of the younger people in our program, like, oh gosh, like, I so wish I would have gotten help at your age. Right. But it was a different time, right? Yeah. Like, you know, but she can see that it's like, oh gosh, now I have to kind of almost unlearn all of this,
all this hard wiring that's been going on for years and years.
Right. But it's still possible. Like, I've had people at every age, no matter how long they've been dealing with this, get help. So if you are somebody going, oh gosh, I've been struggling with it, there's help for you too. Yep. That doesn't mean, you know, if anything, sometimes you're more ready because you're so sick and tired of these behaviors that like, okay, tell me what I need to do. I'm willing to do everything, versus some of my teens who are like, you know, I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, this is a problem for my mom. So.
And I imagine it's really hard with teens and college age kids because of social media, and it's the same always. There's always bodies that are put on display that people want to try and get like, and even influencers putting out these fad diets. And I wanted to ask this. I typed out diets so I remembered, because I kept forgetting. But how harmful can diets be for people who have recovered from an eating disorder?
Well, what I say to my clients, you will never be able to go on a diet again, right? And like, diets are tricky because somebody, like, it's kind of like the drinking thing. Mm-hmm. You might have two kids in college who are drinking, and drinking maybe the same amount, but one person is a little bit more, you know, genetically loaded to have a problem with substances. Throw in a few stressors, and then that really can become a problem with alcohol. It's the same thing with dieting, right? It's like most every client I work with, their story is similar in the sense of, I just was wanting to lose a few pounds, Dr. Jen. I wasn't trying to, like, you know, get myself into this whole eating disorder. So, you know, the beginning usually starts, usually, not for every single person, but usually it's like a diet that then turned into this whole disorder to eventually an eating disorder. So honestly, it's a slippery slope. So honest, if people are out there listening, it's like, there is a way, right? Like, to work with somebody who, again, is really trying to teach about mindful eating, balance and moderation. Like, there are healthier ways to start changing our relationship with food without it being a diet, because truly, you know, the statistics really show most diets are not very effective. And even if people do, quote unquote, lose the weight, that they're trying to lose, many times it's like they do gain it back and they gain back more, and then it can affect your body, your metabolism. So honestly, the whole diet thing is, it can be dangerous for people.
Yeah, definitely. I think that something that's helped myself and I'm sure other people too, is having like preparing for yourself, right? I meal prep every week. And that way I have food, I know it's there. And because I've also struggled with binging, and that happens with the restrictive eating. And so I know that it's there. I know that I don't have to worry about ordering food and buying food, and just having whatever you want in there. That's overall, generally, I try to stay on the more like chickens and vegetables and potatoes or pastas, like getting each area, your fats, proteins, carbs, and vegetables in, and you can have everything. You can have that cupcake, you can have whatever, just having it mindfully, like you said. And I know this is kind of where the exhaustion comes in, right? It's you're now having to think about, am I really hungry? And that stuff comes naturally after a while. So
after just, a while,
yeah, sticking that out.
Yeah. Because a big part of these eating disorders is like you're disconnecting, right? You're disconnecting from the wisdom of your body. You're disconnecting from how you're feeling. So a big part of the work that I do is really you're starting to reconnect again to yourself. And just like you said, sometimes those cues are totally off, right? Because you've been living in your head, like, what does everybody else say about which diet I should be on, or what exercise program, or what does social media say the latest and greatest is? It's like, you're living from here. And what we really start trying to teach is like, there really is a wisdom of our body and our spirits, and starting to connect from the inside out. But it, again, it takes time, right? For the cues to come back, listening to the hunger, listening to the fullness. You talked about like really being able to prepare. And I actually had a session this morning with somebody, and we were having that same conversation, like, you know, no food in my house. Well, I don't tend to make the best, right? Like she was saying, I don't tend to make the best food choices when I'm doing like, you know, like my Uber Eats and this and that, but like, I'm not choosing, like, it wasn't easy access. So we just started saying, okay, like, how do we start, like you're saying, like really prepare yourself for the week, so at least you have a better chance to make those choices that feel good for you, right?
Yes.
So I think that comes from, like, I can see, Samantha, you've done some work with this, like, right, the preparing and really thinking things through like that. And that is some of what you learn, because like, where do people really learn about their relationship with food?
Nowhere.
I mean, where are we taught that? I mean, our families mostly.
Which is normally not the best.
So I mean,
in coming from the households that I'm sure a lot of eating disorder clients and have are ones that also possibly contain other people who have eating disorders.
Sometimes it does, right? Yeah, sometimes it does.
Yeah. I have a family member that was very open to me about their purging when I was young, and it was an adult family member. So that seemed very natural to me. It seemed very important to get your weight under control versus your mental health. And so
we're here to see how we're kind of like the modeling that happens, right? And how we're kind of like, right. And that was a family member, an adult family member. And so then it's like, oh, wait, you know, is that what I'm supposed to do? Right.
Is that easier than just listening to my body? Then yeah, I think that's another thing. People just, it's not a miracle pill, right? There's no miracle pill that's going to do anything for you. And there's no outlined book of how to lose this much in a week. And it's not like that. And it shouldn't be about that. It should be about your insides, making your mind and your body feel good and feel healthy.
Yeah. And look, if there was one meal plan that worked for every human being, it would be out there and all of us would be following it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I
Exactly.
think there are some basic things, right, that we really teach in terms of consistency, because bodies tend to like consistency, that we're fueling ourselves in this kind of cyclical, consistent, like you said, all different food groups in these balanced ways. And at the same time, it's like each body is different. So it's really learning to listen to what has you feel energized, what has you feel you're most alive, like, how do you know what your full point is? It's funny, right before here, we unexpectedly had some company in town. And so we were all at this brunch, right? It was this beautiful brunch, right? It was exquisite. Like, I don't know if I've ever been to a brunch quite like this, right? But it was like, there's just no way you can eat this amount of food unless I stayed for like 5 hours, right? and so the, one of the people that I had just met at the brunch, she was like, is that all you're going to eat? And I'm like, I have to listen to what works for me. Right. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, here's another, you know, drink. I'm like, I'm doing a podcast. Like, I'm not, doing, you know, no, I'm not showing up for Sam's, you know, like, I know, like I listen to myself, right. Yeah. I have to listen to myself and my body and what feels good in my body. Right. And I'm like, and so I was like, no, I'm really good. I'm really good right now. And I'm now going home to go prepare so I can be fully present with this. But it was interesting to see like how it was like, that's all you're going to eat? No, don't you want to? I'm like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm really good. Like, I'm feeling really happy with my food choices and how my body feels right now. But it was interesting to see that, like, come on. Like, we're all doing it, you know?
And I think I'm really glad you brought that up, actually, because this is one of the questions I added in without sending it to you. I added it in this morning. Yeah. But what can be harmful things to say or do when with people who are struggling? And not that obviously this was the case, but if someone weren't knowing that someone was struggling with the eating disorder, asking if they're why are you not eating, right, and questioning their food choices and causing that stress, I would have to imagine that's one of the harmful things that gets said.
Yeah, this one, I'll say one of the first one that came to mind when you said that is making a comment about somebody's appearance around weight.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Of course.
And it's hard because especially if somebody, say somebody's goal is to restore weight, right? Mm-hmm, like they're working with our treatment team and that is one of their goals that they've now dropped in an unhealthy way. So they are trying to restore with us and our nutritionists and our team. And then their family says, you look so good now. Even though the family's really coming from a good place, the person may hear that as, oh my gosh, I'm getting fat.
Yep.
That's what that little voice might still kind of like distort what's supposed to, you know, what the family is trying to give like positive. So I try to say to families, stay away from any comments around weight to anybody
or
commenting on anybody's weight.
Yeah.
Even somebody like a stranger or somebody in the media, because then the person may go, oh, they're commenting on so-and-so's weight. What are they thinking about mine? Like this whole weight talk is just, right.
Yeah.
It's just kind of unhealthy for anybody, eating disorder or otherwise. Right. It's like, why do we have to comment on all of that? Like, does that make us a healthier society by like doing all of that? Not really. So that's one that I really tell families to, if you're really wanting to get a compliment in another way, like, wow, like I just really acknowledge you for the courage it has taken to like put yourself in therapy or put yourself in that program. I know how hard you're working and I'm so proud of you. Like something about like that versus the appearance, the weight, that one's a really tricky one. I think the other thing is sometimes it's hard. I mean, sometimes it's hard for loved ones to know, like, how do I best support or what don't I say? What I say to families is like, first of all, you're not supposed to know how to support somebody, but I mean, you've never done this before. Why would you know this? So that's where we get to have a dialogue,
right?
Right. We get to sit down with say it's parents or spouse and the person, and we get to talk out like, what is helpful for you? Well, tell us what's not helpful for you. Like an example would be, sometimes I've had people say, if their loved one's giving them any kind of comments about the food when they're having their meal, I have some people say, please don't talk about my food during the meal.
Okay. That's fair too. Right?
And then I've had other people say, no, it's fine. Say it in the moment. So I think this is, again, where we get to have those open dialogues, because different things kind of work for different people in terms of, you know, what they need in terms of their own support as they're working through some of those things. So I don't know if I answered your question. If there's another follow-up question, I'm happy to answer that.
That definitely answered my question. I asked too, because the previous episode that I had, the person I had on discussed how her mom would weigh her every day. And so she started to put weight rocks in her pockets and stuff. And that seems obviously more like an obvious one of what not to do. I would say that, but then it happened. So I guess just bringing it up again, staying away from a scale, I would have to say, is also pretty important.
I would say just if that is part of your treatment, right? To weigh, a lot of times, like with our program, we do blind weights, or there's these really cool scales now that are designed for treatment where you step on the scale, there's no number, but then the number is actually sent to your treatment team electronically.
That's great.
And so it's just like, okay, it's a measure of something to understand what's going on.
Yeah. Are they actually going through with the treatment?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's important. But in recovery, like making sure that, I think that sometimes can be a trigger for people, is getting right back on a scale and then
totally
surprised with the number.
Yeah. I mean, I always tell an example for myself where like I went to my, like I have this great holistic kind of doctor, functional medicine doctor. And he, you know, they wanted to weigh me. I hadn't been there for a while. And I was like, oh, no big deal. And then I was like, it really wasn't helpful for me. I was like, wait, did I gain weight? Is this a different scale? It was a different office. I'm like, did you change the floor? I was like, I can't believe this is bothering me, but it was bothering me. Yep. And I'm like, what was the purpose of that? I was like, whoa. And I'm like, wow. You know, this is what some of my clients really go through. And then I'm like, did that number inform any of my treatment that guy was doing with me? Zero.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, okay, now we're going to recommend this, this, and this based on this number. It was like, it just wasn't helpful. It just wasn't helpful in any way. And if anything, it was almost like I obsessed about it, and it surprised me. I was like, it surprised me that it bothered me as much as it did. Yeah. Right. So like I'm somebody who I just say, like, you kind of know how your clothes fit. Like if you really, you know, are like unsure of something, like you kind of have a sense of something, but do you really need a scale? Do you really need to know that number? And if that is part of your treatment, maybe you want to have somebody else handle that part of your treatment. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, now that you bring that up, is it possible to ask your general physician to not weigh you, or?
You know what? Sometimes you can ask them to not weigh you. A lot of times they still really want to, because it's so part of, you know, mm-hmm. that way, you know, that medical kind of model, but you can ask to have a blind weight.
Okay.
So you turn around. I'm glad we have that. And the hard thing is sometimes there's the medical practices aren't used to it. So they'll blind weight you and then
have it on the chart.
They'll have it on the chart. So the person will see it, or they'll call it out. So it takes something. So if this is something that's really, you know, I really don't want to know my number, I tell people call ahead of time and say, you know, I really want a blind weight, and please make sure, you know, the nurse doesn't tell me the number. I don't need to know that. And it's interesting, like, if I went back to that doctor, I probably would just say, I don't need to be weighed.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not part of my treatment. You know, like, I'm not working with him on anything like that. I'm like, I don't need this. He doesn't need this. You know, like, I, at this point, that's what I would say. I was like, I don't need to know this.
Well, I'm glad we put that on there, because I'm sure I didn't even think about that. Just going to the doctor, you can't run away from it sometimes. So, we kind of talked about what not to say or do, and we did dive into what to say and how to support them, how to support someone.
The one other thing about what to say, I oftentimes say to loved ones to say, like, how are you doing? Like, how are you doing? Right. A check-in, and to make it a little more open. Like, sometimes with teens, they may say, like, my teen, like, fine. Okay. And then you might have to ask a follow-up question. But, like, I think sometimes it's good to try to, you're trying to get the person really to talk about, like, emotionally how they're doing.
Yeah. That's the name of this podcast. How are you? Good.
There you go. Right? Yeah. Good you. Exactly. Exactly. So can you try to connect with them on that deeper level that they feel safer to really say what's really going on? That's one of the most helpful things I think people can do as a loved one. Like, hey, like, how's it really going?
Yeah.
If that's what you're trying to get to. How's it really going?
Yeah. And one thing my therapist kind of taught me with that is asking both, how are you and where are you? Like, where are you right now? Are you in your body? Are
like
you?
That.
Yeah. And I really like that one too, because that's not just a good or fine answer. You really got to think on that one. What methods do you use within the FAB program, and any certain type of theories that you use or your theoretical orientation you want to talk about?
Probably at this point, I probably use a little of this, like it is an integrative approach that we really use. So one of the big things with working with somebody who is struggling with disordered eating or wherever they fall along that spectrum is you do really need best practices is a comprehensive treatment team. And I will say we have a delicious, we really do. We have just a great treatment team with really dedicated people who are on this team, that this really is their mission, their calling. And we have all different modalities on this team. So we do come from this holistic perspective. We always make sure somebody has a medical doctor. So I'm always in communication as a team. We're always in communication with the medical doctor. We have a nutritionist. We have like a holistic person who, you know, she does yoga, she does meditation. We talk about life issues. So we do like life coaching, because that's really kind of the point, is we're getting over these food and body issues to live our joyful, fulfilling lives. So we're really having people start to look at beyond the eating struggles, like, what do you want your life to be about? And that's a really, I think, powerful question for people. So, and we do lots of experiential kinds of things as well. And so so we do individual sessions with FAB. We do group sessions. We do team meetings as well, because we're tracking people through what we call Sam, you're Sam now. You're Samantha for the beginning, you're Sam now. We call it the 5 stages of transformation. And our ultimate goal is to get people into the thriving stage, right? So it's certainly a process. So we're really kind of evaluating along each stage how a person is really doing in terms of other coping skills, like we talked about, other ways of relating to their food, to their body, and then like, what are they really creating for their lives beyond, you know, it wasn't intentional. You were trying to create an eating disorder, but now we can be very intentional about the kind of life that really is going to be meaningful for us.
Yes. Yes. I love that. And always an integrative approach. I think that everyone has a certain one that they might use, but every type of theory has its benefits to it as well that can help. Mm-hmm. But what for the person does the recovery process look like
in terms of if they join us with FAB?
Yes.
So The first step is what we call launching, right? So they'll either speak with me or they'll speak. We have a client relations specialist to really, you know, find out about the program and to make sure that they're really a fit for what we're offering. Sometimes people, like I said, do need more. You have to be medically stable to be able to do the outpatient treatment. So again, they work with us along these five stages. And we say that the program ultimately is a year-long program. Many times we start with somebody for 6 months and we evaluate, okay, how has it gone? It's surprising how quickly 6 months of the program goes, but to really go through the five stages, we tell people to give themselves a year to really go, you know, through it. And another really fantastic part of the program is we also have groups. So you are with other like-minded people, and we do it on Zoom. So we do a Saturday group and it's facilitated by one of us on the team. We actually have a team of nine now. So it's facilitated by a different perspective of, it could be a, we're talking about food, we're talking about body image. Yesterday was joyful movement. Like, how do you know if you're exercising just to burn those calories, or like you're really moving your bodies, your body in ways that makes you feel really good. So that was the group yesterday. And then we also offer a support group. We do really cool things like meal support therapy, where we have some of our staff members that are working with you at the actual meal on Zoom. So we use lots of creativity with this program to, again, come to you in your home to be able to really offer the treatment. And then one last thing I didn't say is we have this, you know how you were talking about the hardwiring of the brain. So the way that I think of FAB is we're trying to go in all these different ways through the individual work, through the group work. And we also have a interactive curriculum. So every week our participants, our clients are also reading these different lessons around eating disorders. It could be something around coping skills or journaling or body image, or why should you be eating carbohydrates, right? There's all these different lessons. And so they work on the lesson, and then we're able to see their responses and interact with them on their lessons throughout the week. So what I will say is we're a very high touch program. Like, if you come into FAB, like you're going to be working with one of us, at least one of us, on a daily basis to really, again, to get the most out of trying to transform these food and body issues more quickly.
That is so awesome. Thank you so much for everything that you do and everyone that works at FAB does, because that's a lot of time and a lot of connection. And it takes certain people that can make those connections. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I always say it takes a village to really, you know, treat somebody with an eating disorder. It takes a village. It really does. I mean, I think all of us need a village. I want a village. How about you?
Yeah. I'll take two villages. Actually. Yeah. But I loved when I took group last semester. Group counseling was amazing. That was such an experience that I won't forget. So please don't ever brush off group, even if you're a severe introverted person. Like, it benefits everyone, because even the most introverted people, when they are out to the side and just listening, they can get helped just by that. So it was an awesome experience. I'm really glad that you have group in there.
Yeah, I am too.
So the last question, or the second to last question I have is, what are some myths and facts about eating disorders? Maybe some that you hear and want to kind of...
You know, what that comes up is like, oh, it's just about vanity or something like that. Or, oh, it's just that person, you know, wants to be skinny. And like if it was literally that easy, these problems would be much easier to get over and to treat. So like, that's just, to me, when I hear that one, it's, you know, somebody who just doesn't get it, but why should they get it? Right. Because also what I think we see sometimes in the media is that, right? Like, they'll focus on the celebrity who's lost lots of weight, and like, they'll make it all about like somehow this, it's just only about appearance or something, but it's always deeper than that. So I think that's a big one. I think the other thing I've heard even some professionals say is that like the person's always going to struggle. Like if you have any, you're going to struggle your whole life. I don't believe that. Like can.
Right. But if you don't treat the underlying problems.
Yeah, you can. Right. But I do believe treatment and help and healing is possible for every human being.
Yeah.
I really do believe that. So I think that's another one of those myths that I've heard before too. Another one is it only affects young people because sometimes you associate it with like teenagers or, you know, college age. But like I said, I've worked with people in their 70s that are struggling. Yep. Now they didn't get the help
early on, yeah.
You know, like they probably that wasn't even kind of on the radar of anybody. Mm-hmm. So eating disorders can affect all ages, races, you know, like just across it. The other thing, it affects men.
Yep.
Sometimes
that's what I was just about to say.
Females, right? Females. And I do have a few men, and if you heard them speak, very similar to the women that I work with. Mm-hmm. Right. So it, and I think the unfortunate thing is with males, it sometimes can get missed even more because the expectation is females, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you for clearing all of my questions up for you, for me mm-hmm. today. And for everyone listening, I know that this will be able to help a lot of people and a few people I know that listen. And just thank you for your time. Honestly, I'd love to have you back on in the future.
Let's do it, Sam.
Awesome. I have like a lot of questions. I do.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to be on. And if would I be able to just also offer a resource, a gift for people, just if you know people are hearing, and because it kind of goes really along with what we've been talking about. And
yes,
for
please.
People who are out there and they're like, gosh, am I struggling? Like, aren't I struggling? Like, where do I fall? So one of the things we did as a team that I really love, and it's super user friendly. So our gift to people today is for you to take our little quiz that really goes through having you look at your relationship with food and body. And I know that might be like, I don't want to do that. Literally, it takes 2 minutes. It's like just a few questions and it's like, it'll be super quick. It's very user friendly. So Samantha, what people can do is they can go to my website, and my website is drjen360.com. I'll spell it. So doctor and then Jen, JEN360.com. And then what will pop up is the FAB program website. And then there's going to be a block that says like, take this quiz. And then you just click right there. The quiz pops up. It's super cute, user friendly, but it's like, we put a lot of thought into it and we wanted people to be able to do it. And for it not to be too intimidating, but it's a really great quiz. And then you'll get some results. And what I also want to let people know on that 360, the drjen360.com site, there's also a way to connect with me personally. So if you have any questions, you want to text me, if there was something else that came up, like we really want to be a resource, Samantha, to you and to your listeners. So you can also reach out to me personally. And some people may choose after they take the quiz to set up a consult just to take it further. And that's an option too, if you choose, only if people choose, but take the quiz.
Yes. Thank you so, so much. I love that y'all have that. And I'd love to have the, you say the Instagram too, that people can go follow
thank
and
you.
Keep up to date.
Yes. So it's just FAB program. So all of our social media, so you can look us up and connect with us that way. And yeah, we'd love to have you follow us, connect with us, take our quiz, and any way that we can be of support to you, Samantha, and to your listeners.
Thank you. And I'll make sure to put all that information in the show notes and on the Instagram post as well, so
thank
that
you.
It's easily accessible for everyone. Awesome. So thank you so much for your time today. I think this was a really awesome and informative episode, and I really enjoy talking with you.
Me too. Thank you, Sam.
Okay. Well, you have a great Sunday, and I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Today's music was written and produced by Tyler O'Brien. You can find him on Instagram at Dreamscape, DREAMSCAPE, and follow his band at Wastelander_band on Instagram.